stay tuned now for What Happened Here with Rich Thomas. Rich Thomas is the former mayor of Mount Vernon. And now, What Happened Here with Rich Thomas on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back. You're listening to WVOX at Whitney Global Media Station. My name is Rich Thomas, former mayor of Mount Vernon. And this week, you have What Happened Here. Today at noon, we're here every Wednesday at noon from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on 1460 on your AM dial or worldwide on WVOX.com. You can call in today at 914-636-0110. We have a very special guest. Our guest is Ben Baer. Ben Baer is going to talk about his new book, Why the Right to an Abortion is Sacrosanct. He is the director of content for the Ayn Rand, some people call it Ayn Rand, but he pronounces it Ayn Rand, from the Ayn Rand Institute in Texas. And he has, he lectures, he teaches objectivism, and he is someone that has a lot of, you know, thoughts. Some people may call them conservative, but if you really listen to them, they sound pretty progressive in the sense that he's advocating for people to make, you know, a decision based on values and not necessarily their loyalty to people or groupthink, which is, to me, a very, you know, a very tremendous position to take, because when you follow the group that's loyal to an individual, not loyal to their values, you can get the wrong outcome when it comes to leadership. So I look forward to talking to Ben and welcoming your questions. We're going to talk about a variety of topics, from why the right to abortion is sacrosanct on the heels of Kansas rejecting the move to take away women's rights and moving to protect women's rights in Kansas, and what does that mean for the midterm elections. Recently, just on the Hill, there was action to provide veterans finally with health care and coverage resulting from burn pits. So that's something that is an issue that Republicans obviously got wrong, and another issue that they seem to be wrong on is the abortion issue, especially with Kansas taking steps to protect the woman's right to vote and voting to keep it in their constitution. So he's going to talk about Texas. Ben Baer is going to talk about Texas and what's going on the Texas front, especially with respect to abortion, but also individual rights and how and why the right to an abortion is sacrosanct. So we look forward to having Ben on in a few moments. But if you want to call in and ask questions and talk about the philosophy of you know, one of the most you know, prolific thought leaders of the 20th century, Ayn Rand, she wrote the book Atlas Shrugged. Atlas Shrugged being a book that kind of talks about principles, and something that we can get into and have him provide some feedback on and some context. And I hope you all tap in with your questions online, but also on the telephone. Last night, just want to share with you, I was in Mount Vernon, obviously I live there, and attended the National Night Out. It was such a great experience to see the firefighters there, also see the police, and you know, I'm so happy that the police is doing their best to keep the city safe with, you know, very little resources. I heard such a shameful situation today where there are only four cars patrolling the city, and, you know, that means cars have to double up, and it really reduces the visibility and the presence of police. And it just goes to show you that equipment is essential when it comes to safety or defending freedom. And right now we have a scenario where our police, you know, do not have the tools available to them. And it's just a continuation of the problems that I was pointing out many years ago, is that Mount Vernon has a money problem and we have to fix that. And hopefully we can get a better situation with respect to, you know, managing Mount Vernon's money. But it's hard to do when you don't have support from, you know, organizations that are supposed to help you do that. And, you know, without reliving the past too much, I think it's important for us all to know that Mount Vernon is facing some significant financial issues, and I look forward to helping the city address those issues over time. I've had a chance to talk with the comptroller last night briefly, but also with many of the residents of Mount Vernon who are asking me to get back and get back involved, and they need help. And so I'm here to help. I'm going to keep helping as much as possible, but I do want you all to know that I was very happy to see everyone out there last night at National Night Out. It's good to see the police doing their best, even though they don't have all the support that they need from City Hall. It's happy to see everyone out there, including, you know, DPW and Recreation, but also the fire department. I saw them out there, and you know, we all need safety, and we all need to protect our community. So good seeing everybody at National Night Out, and thank you all for the warm, warm reception. I actually didn't get home until after 9 o'clock. I got there a little after 7, and supposed to be over by 8, but, man, people kept me out there for an extra hour just to talk and point out issues and buildings and problems with the building department. I mean, it's just, it's astounding what's going on, but I can only tell you that I look forward to having more discussions with the community about Mount Vernon, but I really look forward to having a discussion with Ben Bayer when he calls in so we can talk about why the right to an abortion is sacrosanct. And maybe, you know, if he has time, we could talk a little bit about his groundbreaking speech about tribal politics, which I found fascinating because it's really a dynamic that I think we may see a resistance from, given the fact that abortion is on the table and literally on the ballot. Ben, thank you for joining us on What Happened Here.
Hi, Richard. Thanks for having me.
You know, just want to first, for everybody that's listening, this is Ben Bayer from, now, correct me if I pronounce it incorrectly, but I believe it's pronounced Ayn Rand. Did I pronounce it right?
Yes, it's the Ayn Rand Institute, and we're a nonprofit educational foundation devoted to educating people about the Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism.
Now, can you answer the question, why Atlas is Shrugged?
That's a reference to the title of her book, Atlas Shrugged, and it's a work of fiction. So she's projecting a kind of alternate history or future at the time she wrote it, hoping that Atlas doesn't shrug. But the reason it happens in the book is it's essentially a book about how the leading minds of the nation decide to go on strike because they are. They're treated as subhumans who have a duty to produce for the sake of everybody else, and they realize they don't have to be treated that way. They shouldn't be treated that way. And to connect, perhaps a little bit improbably, to the issue that we're talking about today,
mm-hmm.
I think women are human beings too, who have a right to pursue their own happiness for their own sake, and shouldn't be turned into beasts of burden. And that's a big part of the reason why Ayn Rand was an opponent of bans on abortion. She was a vocal supporter of abortion rights.
Mm-hmm.
And we should definitely talk more about that.
Well, I want to get to your book, Why the Right to an Abortion is Sacrosanct. And for people that want to find it, you know, look it up. It's definitely a prescient work. Yesterday, Kansas had a vote. Can you tell everybody a little bit about what that vote was and how it relates to your book and what's going on in Texas? But before we get to that, can you just tell people who you are and just some of the stuff you do at the Institute? And then we'll come right into, you know, the book and how important it is for people to know about what happened in Kansas.
Sure. So my background is in philosophy. I was a philosophy professor for 10 years before I came to the Institute. So what I do at the Institute is essentially to be a philosophy professor in our programs. We have a university of our own called the Ayn Rand University, where we teach courses online to students who want to learn more about our philosophy. And I also write and I speak, and I apply Ayn Rand's ideas to current events, and abortion is one of the examples where there's a lot to say about how philosophic ideas apply to this very important controversy. You asked about the Kansas vote, and I'm actually really happy that we get to have this interview this morning because of what happened last night, yesterday in Kansas. So just to bring your listeners up to date. Essentially what happened was...
So just if you just hold that thought and hold that down, we are coming right back from a quick commercial break with Ben Baer from the Ayn Rand Institute talking about what happened in Kansas and why it's important for you and the right to abortion being sacrosanct. Don't change that dial. Listening to WVOX at Whitney Global Media Station. My name is Rich Thomas, former mayor of Mount Vernon. Looking forward to having and continuing our discussion with our special guest. Our special guest being Ben Baer from the Ayn Rand Institute. He's a director of content, but he's also a prolific thought leader that applies the thoughts and philosophies of Ayn Rand to current issues and events. He wrote a book, Why the Right to an Abortion is Sacrosanct. And it is not only ahead of its time, it is leading the situation in terms of how people should be resisting tribal politics and not be loyal to individuals, but be loyal to their principles and their values and be an objective thinker that doesn't fall for groupthink. So before we went to break, we started to touch upon the vote in Kansas and why it was important and what it may mean for the midterms and how it may play out in Texas where Ben is. So if you want to call in, the phone number is 914-636-0110. Again, that's 914-636-0110. Ben, Kansas, what happened in Kansas?
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about. So essentially there was a... Republican legislators tried to pass a law back in 2015 that would ban certain kinds of abortion procedures, the dilation and evacuation procedures. And that went up the level of the court in up to the level of the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, in 2019. Supreme Court said, no, the Kansas Constitution protects the right to an abortion, which voided the law that had been passed. And the Republican legislators weren't very happy with that decision, so they basically put it to the voters, saying, do you agree that the Constitution protects this right or not? They didn't phrase it that way. They phrased it in a much more misleading way. They wanted to amend the Constitution to declare that there wasn't a recognized right. But what's surprising and pleasantly surprising to me, at least, is that Kansas voters rejected the attempt to amend the Constitution to void the right to abortion. Not only did they reject it, but it was by very large margins, almost 59% voting in effect to retain abortion rights. And that's in a red state like Kansas. And if you run the numbers and compare the number of people voting on this proposition to those who were voting in other primary elections, it's pretty clear that it included a large number of Republicans. It had to be in a state like Kansas. And I think that connects to the issue that you were raising before about tribalism. That so we see here an example where at least a good chunk of Republicans in Kansas were willing to break with their own party's position on this issue. And I think because they're thinking in terms of not loyalty to what their party says, their tribe says, their leaders say, but they're thinking in terms of a principle. And the principle here is individual liberty. And if you look at some of the ads that ran in Kansas to oppose this measure, that's the principle they appealed to. They said, look, if you add this to the Constitution, what you're in effect saying is that there should be a government mandate prohibiting a woman from using her body as she chooses. And I think that those Republicans in Kansas who really understand that principle and who are willing to break with party loyalty are the ones who voted to make this happen.
Look at that. Now we have a caller. Caller Venture on the line. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, how you doing, Mayor? I'm enjoying your guest. I would only offer this. I think when you talk about Ayn Rand and, you know, Atlas Shrugged, Fountainhead, and the rest of the works, it's kind of like absolutist thinking. It's interesting thinking. But let's get down to cases, as it were. In Kansas, even though the law was protected, so-called, there were still restrictions in Kansas, 20 weeks or 20 seconds. So let me ask your guest a couple of questions.
Sure.
Do you believe that what is growing inside of a woman in the ninth month, maybe minutes before birth, is a human being?
So that's an excellent question. I'm really glad you asked it because I think it cuts to the issue of principles.
Yes, it's a simple question. Do you have a yes or no answer to that?
I think that it is not a human being in the sense of being an individual human being who has rights.
All right, so it's not a human being. At what point does it become a human being?
At birth. And
all right, so in other words, let's try to use some of that kind of logic and thinking.
Sure.
Two minutes before birth, it's not a human being, but once it is expelled or taken from the mother, it is a human being, correct?
It is a human being in the sense that it's an individual who becomes fully individuated from a mother. And
I understand. I'm just trying to make it simple.
That is the basis for individual rights.
I understand. Does that individual right exist before what comes out of the woman draws its first breath?
No, it doesn't.
So in other words, my father was a doctor, and many times, and I was at the birth of my children, a doctor would take the baby from the womb and then encourage the baby, slap its rear end or something, to get it to draw its first breath. So let me ask you this in the Ayn Rand world of thinking. If the doctor were to take the baby and place it on a table, but it's not yet breathing, is it a human being?
Well, a human being is a living organism.
And so it's not a human being.
It's not alive, then.
Then
it's not alive. I don't think anybody is.
So we're at an absolute moment in the show. We're going to ask you to hold that dial, hold those thoughts. We'll be right back from break. Don't change that dial. Listen to What Happened Here on WVOX.
And now back to What Happened Here with Rich Thomas, the former mayor of Mount Vernon, on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back. You're listening to WVOX at Whitney Global Media Station. My name is Rich Thomas, former mayor of Mount Vernon, and we are here every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. asking the question of what happened here? And this question is what happened here with and why the right to an abortion is sacrosanct. And we have our special guest, Ben Baer, from the Ayn Rand Institute. He's the director of content, but also teaches at the Objectivist Academic Center. He lectures and gives interviews on behalf of ARI. He wrote a book, Why the Right to Abortion is Sacrosanct. And before we went to break, we were having a very pointed discussion about an individual, when someone becomes a human. We're talking about abortion. And there are some absolute bright lines that are being drawn from a philosophical standpoint. But we were also talking about what happened in Kansas and what's going to happen possibly in the midterm. So, Ben, I know we were talking with Vince, who was, you know, bringing some very focused points to bear. You want to, you know, just provide some context as to what your approach is in your book and why the right to abortion is sacrosanct?
Sure. So the previous caller brought up the fact that in Kansas, even in Kansas, after this proposition was defeated, that there are still limits on abortion, I think up to 20 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, I think, suggesting that it would, even if that's okay, it would be wrong to make abortion legal all the way until birth. And I was giving the beginning of an argument for why I think it should be legal until birth. And Ayn Rand thought the same thing. The reason that she thought it was because she was an ardent defender of individual rights. And the woman has individual rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That is perfectly clear. She did not think that the fetus was an individual human being and therefore wasn't protected by individual rights. The fetus is genetically human. Nobody questions that. But there's nothing magical about human genetics that confers moral status. And I've never myself heard a rational secular argument for why that's the case. I think it's usually a kind of cover for a religious argument. And so you have to think about, well, why do we have individual rights? What is it about human beings that gives us rights? And if you think of sort of paradigm cases of individual rights, rights to free speech, rights to freedom of religion, freedom of association, the kinds of rights that are in the First Amendment to the Constitution, these are what I think of as clear-cut examples of individual rights. And what they all have in common with each other is that they're all about the fact that we, in a civilized society, if we want to be able to pursue our happiness, we need to be able to disagree with each other. We need to be able to go our separate ways, even when we disagree. And that's really what rights are for generally. They're for allowing people to draw boundaries around their lives, given that they're interacting in society, and that they need to be able to do so separately. But then that means that, and this is, I think, Ayn Rand's insight, that individual rights only apply to individuals, to beings who can go their separate ways, who are physically and physiologically separate from each other. And that means that they don't apply to something like a fetus, which is a part of a woman's body, in that it's physically melded to her body, and she doesn't have, as long as it's there, she can't go her separate way from that fetus. She can't give it up for adoption without going through.
We got you, Vince. We're going to come to you, Vince.
I just wanted to offer another thought, but I'll wait.
Thanks, Vince. So as Ben was saying, everybody, there's a timing issue, and the timing is predicated on the separation between the woman and the fetus, but not just the fetus as itself, but the fetus becoming born, meaning the baby is breathing on its own. It's completely separate from the woman, and that's where, you know, the fetus transitions from being a fetus to a living, breathing, separate individual being. Is that right, Ben?
Yeah, there's going to be borderline questions about when exactly that happens. And I think that that's a decision that you just have to make in the law. The law right. has to decide it precisely what moment. And that's because rights, just like most other concepts that we use, they're not some kind of magical property that's out there written in the fabric of reality. They're concepts that we humans use in order to live together in society. We're the ones who have to draw the lines. We have to do it on the basis of the most obvious facts that we can find. I think birth is a very bright line that we can use to draw that line.
Mm-hmm.
Where exactly during birth is going to have to be a question, I think, for the legislators, for the judges.
Vince has another question.
What are you saying?
I said Vince has another question. Vince?
Well, just a thought. When you say the fetus is part of the woman's body, that's really not correct. The fetus is a separate body with separate genetics. It just happens to be, and dare I say, trapped and subject to the whims of the person in whose body it is being held. So it is a separate body, separate genetics, as you say. I get that. But here we are in a very difficult situation where you're saying that a fetus that is born or removed from a mother and placed on a table in a hospital room, but not yet breathing, is not yet a human being. So we are in the unfortunate situation, like was almost proposed in Virginia, to allow what was called post-birth abortion. Would you be in favor of that if the child has not yet drawn its first breath?
I haven't taken a position on that.
Think about that.
It's going to depend a lot on the situation. I mean,
here's our dilemma with this kind of thing.
Could I answer your question?
Yeah, hang on, Vince.
I'm sorry.
If it's not breathing because it's stillborn, then
I didn't say that.
Well,
doctors.
So this is where you know the hypotheticals become.
No, it's not hypothetical. It happens every day in hospitals around America.
Okay.
Doctors have to help a baby draw its first breath. Right.
I think if it's a very common procedure that is commonplace in giving birth.
That's right. Well, what if the doctor doesn't do it?
I can see a case for why a law should be drawn up to say that is
okay. Well, if the mother says, after you take the baby out, just let it stay on the table. Don't help it breathe. Should that be permitted?
I don't have a strong position on that.
Well, maybe Ayn Rand. We need to look at some of her writings. Because, I respect what you're talking about, but I think we have lost our moral compass here. That as a society, we are using all manner of trickery and all other things to basically justify what we all understand to be murder. That when you have a child in the womb at 7, 8, 9 months that is physically capable of life, and the mother has no physical ailments whatsoever, in New York State, you're permitted to kill it.
So just to give some structure to the conversation. So, you know, I think that there's, you know, an acknowledgement that after the fetus comes out, there's a moral, and there is a, you know.
Mr. Mayor, I'm sorry to interrupt because I know you may have other calls, but I would hope you would not use the word sacrosanct.
Well, that's the title of his book. This is the title of his book.
Well, because sacrosanct comes from the Latin word that implies a ritual that has a religious connotation. So why don't you use a different phraseology?
That's exactly why I'm using that.
I figured as much, and that's why I brought it up.
I want to take it back.
All right, let's take it back.
It is precious, and it means sacred. And
that's right.
Life,
that's correct.
A woman's life is sacred and precious to her.
Sacred based on what?
Much more than her heartbeat.
Based on God's law or the law of man?
Hold on, Vince. Vince, we're going to put you on hold so he can answer. Hold on, Vince. Go ahead, Ben. Answer.
It's based on the fact that her life is her own life. It's the only life she has to live. She doesn't get another chance. And that is the basis for her valuing her life. And if she doesn't want a child, her life doesn't have room for it. There's no real reason to think that these kinds of cases that we're talking about a baby that's born who is not breathing right away, that these are what this controversy is really about. Even if you're talking about late-term abortion, which is obviously before birth, these are cases, they're very rare. The majority of the cases that happen are when the life of the woman is at stake or when she's going to have to go through a terrible procedure, giving birth to a terribly deformed child. And that is not what it means for her to live a life. Life is more than just a heartbeat. It's not just that she's still breathing. If she's forced to have a child she doesn't want, that is dramatically violating what's precious about her life to her. And in America, where we value the pursuit of happiness, that means something. And I think that the pursuit of happiness is sacred and precious, and laws that are against abortion don't recognize that.
And so, Vince, we just want to tap you back in real quick because I know that. Oh, Vince, all right. So, Vince, thanks for prompting this set of questioning because it's important. This is where people struggle to have these you know, controversial conversations, because, you know, it does reach the limits where decisions must be made, and sometimes those decisions reach philosophical boundaries that, you know, people like Ben have a good grip on articulating. But I want you all to hang in there. Don't change that dial. We're going to come back and talk about why the right to abortion is sacrosanct from the book by Ben Bayer from the Ayn Rand Institute right here on WVOX. Don't change that dial.
And now back to What Happened Here with Rich Thomas, the former mayor of Mount Vernon, on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. My name is Rich Thomas, former mayor of Mount Vernon. You're listening to WVOX at Whitney Global Media Station. And the name of the show is What Happened Here. What Happened Here with the right to an abortion. And Kansas had voted Why the Right to Abortion is Sacrosanct. It's a book by Ben Bayer, our special guest, who is the director of content at the Ayn Rand Institute in Austin, Texas. And we're having a very lively discussion about this very personal topic. And if you want to call in with a question, the phone number is 914-636-0110. And we have one more caller before we get ready to wrap up the show. Joe, you're on the line. Joe, thank you for joining us.
Hello.
Hi, Joe. Thank you for joining What Happened Here. Our special guest is Ben Bayer, and we're talking about his book, Why the Right to Abortion is Sacrosanct. And also, we're going to hopefully have some time to talk about tribal politics. But we know you have a question. We wanted to welcome you to the show to ask What Happened Here.
Yeah, I'll try to make it quickly. First of all, it's not sacrosanct. I don't believe that at all. Okay? The reason that Roe v. Wade was overturned was not whether it was sacrosanct or not. It was because it was never in the Constitution in the first place. And it was left, when it's not in the Constitution, it goes to the states. If you read the 10th Amendment, that where something is not in the Constitution, it goes to the states. Okay, that's all. That's all I have to say.
And thank you, Joe. And the state of Kansas decided yesterday that it was a constitutional protection that they wanted to have in their state constitution. And a state like New York put it in theirs, and Texas doesn't have it. So, Ben, can you talk to us about Texas and your book, and tell us about the structure of your book, why the right to abortion is sacrosanct, and what made you choose the word sacrosanct, and just kind of help provide context to all the listeners about this issue and what made you decide to take it on?
Let me do that in a way that I think addresses the caller's question about the Constitution, because I, too, and Ayn Rand also, thought that the Constitution was sacrosanct, that it was a foundational document for our country that guaranteed basic and sacred individual liberties. Now, it's true, of course, that abortion is not mentioned by name in the Constitution. The caller referenced the 10th Amendment about delegating certain powers to the states, but it's also important to remember the 9th Amendment, which says that that the enumeration of certain rights in the Constitution should not be taken to imply the possession of other rights by the people, that there are unenumerated rights. And this is a perspective that has informed a lot of constitutional jurisprudence. It's why, for example, the court recognized that there was a right to have an interracial marriage, why the court recognized the right to use contraception, the court recognized the right to have a same-sex marriage. These aren't enumerated in the Constitution either, but the way I understand it, at least, and I agree with those decisions, because what the Constitution certainly does enumerate is the right to liberty, the right to individual liberty, which means the right to make choices to govern your own life. And you don't have to enumerate what all of the different possible choices that you could make are, to understand that that is a right. And the founders, part of what made their perspective so revolutionary is that they were giving us general principles to apply to lots of cases that they could never foresee. And that's exactly what a right to liberty does. If you enumerated all the different decisions you could apply it to, wouldn't really be liberty.
And your book is structured, you know, can you walk us through how we get to liberty and why an abortion is sacrosanct in your book and kind of just provide context to everybody? Because I think that, as you point out, the Constitution, particularly with the Ninth Amendment, kind of speaks to it. But to the listeners out there, where can they find your book? Where can they, you know, learn more about you? Because it's obvious that the information you have needs to be shared.
Sure. Well, the book, again, is called Why the Right to Abortion is Sacrosanct. You can get it on Amazon very easily. It's very cheap, even free, I think, if you have Kindle Unlimited. And the book provides a moral case for the right to abortion, which is to say that it shows why a woman's having the right to abortion is morally crucial to her being able to pursue her own life and happiness, which Ayn Rand thought was the ultimate value that one has to pursue in life. We've talked about some of the issues that come up in the book already today. The reason that the book is called Why the Right to Abortion is Sacrosanct is because it aims to protect the woman's own pursuit of happiness. And in my view, I think that is a sacred goal. And I think it is the view also of many Americans. I do also a lot in the book to explain why rights understood this way do not apply to the fetus, why philosophically speaking, the fact that the fetus has a human genetic code is not the basis for rights. If it were, if you had a fetus, fetuses who were twins, they wouldn't have individual genetic codes from each other, but we still think they have rights once they've been born. So I take apart a lot of the common arguments that are made against abortion rights. Many of the arguments that have come up today in conversation, I answer in this book. It's a short book. It's only about 60 pages. It's very accessible. And I guess if people are interested in following me more, the best place to look is on Twitter. I'm very active on Twitter. The handle's Benjamin Bayer. And I tweet a lot about abortion, but I also tweet a lot about a lot of other issues that the Ayn Rand Institute comments on, which they will, once they watch, realize it's not a conventional viewpoint. That even though here I am today arguing in favor of abortion rights, a position that you usually associate with the left, on other days you'll see me arguing for freedom of industry and commerce and free market capitalism, which is a position you traditionally associate with the right. That's the respect in which this is not a tribalistic position.
There you go.
Ayn Rand's philosophy was a philosophy of principle, and it saw that the various political parties that we have today aren't taking their positions on basis of principle, and she cut through a lot of the noise to see what principles unite the right positions across the aisle in many different ways.
So can you talk about the dangers of tribal politics? Because, you know, many communities, even the country, seems to be tearing itself apart because of tribal politics.
Yeah, and abortion is just one example where you see that happening. Mm-hmm. I think that what happens is people start to, and you mentioned before that I did a talk on this that you can see on YouTube, on just called Google Tribalism in Politics. People approach politics as though it were a sports game, and they pick a team kind of arbitrarily, and then they root for that team come what may, regardless of its merits, not because they have an issue of principled value that is at stake where they see this team agrees with them, but because they've decided to side with this team, and then also because they really hate the other team.
And yeah, like the Packers.
Yeah, I use that example because I'm from Wisconsin originally.
Talking to a Giants fan here now. So
it's fine to do that with sports where nothing important is actually at stake. But in politics, there's a lot that affects people that's really at stake. And just to hate the other side is a really terrible motivation for taking the position that you take. And I think a lot of people approach political thinking that way. And you can see this in the way that they shift positions. on issues just because the members of their team are doing it, not because they're trying to be consistent in any position. You've seen this happen on all kinds of issues. One of them is the respect in which the Republican Party mm-hmm. has suddenly become the party of protectionism and the restriction of free trade and anti-big corporations. They used to be the party of free trade and free market capitalism. And so it's not like there's some new facts that we've discovered about these concepts that have suddenly become evident to them. It's because there was a shift in the way the leading voices in their tribe started speaking for whatever exigent reasons, and people just kind of went along with it, not because of any change in principle, but because of the dynamics of their tribe. And I think it's a really dangerous thing. It makes people focus not on the values they want to uphold, but on the other side that they want to hate. And it definitely makes the focus more on loyalty to leaders rather than matters of principle. And I definitely think you see that happening with Republicans with respect to Trump today.
Well, I'm looking ahead, looking at the midterm elections. I certainly will be following you on Twitter. And, you know, looking forward to hearing your thoughts, especially on the midterms, what's going to happen in Texas in particular. You know, will this principle or value of the woman's right to choose, will it make it to the ballot in November in Texas? We don't know. There's some time to tell. And I'm looking forward to having more engaging dialogue about this issue because, you know, even the Canterbury Tales say women want to choose. And so Ayn Rand being a thought leader that I'm very big fan of, very grateful for your time, Ben. Hope you can come back in the near future to talk about more issues that are prescient. And looking forward to everybody following Ben and his thinking at the Ayn Rand Institute in Texas. And look out for his New Deal publication that he's the editor of, but also his book. New Ideal, and Why the Right to Abortion is Sacrosanct. Ben, final words?
Thank you, Richard, and thank you for the voters in Kansas for refusing to beat Tribal.
There you go. Looking forward to see you guys next week. We're here every Wednesday at noon on WVOX. Thank you, everybody. Great show. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.